If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 199. This is our prognostications episode, our final episode of the year 2021. And Matt and I are going to talk about prognostications. We're going to change format a little bit. Instead of us kind of saying what we think is going to happen, I'm going to ask Matt some questions and then we will have a discussion. He'll have an answer and then we'll have a discussion on that answer. It could still be a dumpster fire like our other shows are, but at least we're changing it up a little bit. So, Matt.
Yes, please.
So, for 2021.
Yes.
How do you see the economic forecast in relation to supply chain, availability of technology, distribution of food, those types of things? Is it going to be as bad as some of the naysayers are predicting, or is it going to be worse, or is it going to be better?
I think it will get better, but only marginally so. And the only reason why I say that is because this is a government problem.
Yes.
You know that. I know that. The government still has to figure that out, that it's a government problem. If they would get out of the way, this wouldn't even be a problem. And what's, to me, especially aggravating about that is this is a direct result of elections have consequences.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, I try in public spaces to not be partisan, but this is, I lay this whole thing on Joe Biden and a Democratic Congress and Senate.
Yeah.
When you run this much, when you have this much political power concentrated in one party, you get
the extreme.
You get stupid things happening.
Yeah.
This is a byproduct of that. And that's not to say that if the situation were reversed, would we have a similar stupid problem? I guarantee you we would. This is going to be one of those things that is going to have to be resolved electorally. Fortunately, we have midterms coming up. I expect a major course correction after the election. Unfortunately, that's in November.
Yeah.
So the bulk of next year is going to be continued lame duck. That's my take on that. Do you?
I don't disagree. I actually think some things, I think we're going to get a little bit worse before we get better. I read what is, and this is kind of the funny thing is, one of the things I read every day, they don't do it on Sundays, but, Bloomberg has a free newsletter called Supply Chains, mm-hmm, or Supply Lines.
Yep.
And I read that every morning. It's in my inbox. I read all the way through it. It has links to articles and things, and a lot of them are Bloomberg, but it provides a really good summary of what's going on and Bloomberg's outlook, which, you know, is kind of funny because when you look at Michael Bloomberg having created that, he really has nothing. They are really a good source of financial information, and not just financial information, supply chain information. And one of the things they talked about this morning, in the one I read this morning, was we haven't seen inflation like this since the Reagan era.
Yeah.
The beginning of the Reagan era.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are some alarming trends in there, you know, like food. And it's not because we're not producing food. It's that we can't get food from site A to site B, even in the United States, because of whether you want to call it the Great Resignation or the lack of labor or whatever, there's just not enough people to drive trucks or put it on trains or, you know, to get it shipped across the country.
Part of that.
But I want to say one thing, though. I understand this whole great resignation thing to a large degree. And it's not, yes, our tech company is looking for people, but they're always looking for people because they need people who have specific skill sets and talents to do certain things. But other industries don't. But let's take the Kentucky tornado as an example. So the candle factory, where the majority of people who they've announced dead were working, were not allowed to go home because they feared termination, because the employer said, if you go home, we will terminate you. Well, we also have an Amazon driver in Illinois from that warehouse. She was a driver out delivering, heard the tornado sirens, called dispatch, and dispatch told her, if you come back, you will be terminated. So, you know, when we talk about some of these factors in like the Great Resignation or the labor shortage, which those are logistics jobs, manufacturing and logistics. It's well, one, labor unions aren't helping these people.
Correct.
And so that makes me question what in the hell is labor union doing other than collecting money?
Well, there's no purpose behind it anymore.
Yeah. And two, that employers are slowly reverting back to the things that, again, things that where like right to work laws would have fixed. And so until it is a legislative issue, even on these things,
yes.
Because it's not the individual that needs to be regulated. And I'm not a huge, I don't want tons and tons of regulation, but in this case, this is where the government needs to regulate industry to a degree. Now, I'm not talking about federal government regulation. This is more of, to me, this is a state's issue. And part of the reason I say that, and Kentucky is a right to work state, so being terminated for that would be really hard to do, because you could go back, but you know these people, a lot of people don't have the resources to go back and like sue a former employer, not without doing a class action lawsuit.
Here's where my personal freedom advocate hat goes on. If you are in a job where the company is telling you your safety, your personal safety is less important than getting this widget from point A in the warehouse to point B in that same warehouse.
Or making a candle.
There are enough jobs left in this country
at this point right now, that's exactly that it. Job. Those people should have just
left.
There should have been, I'm afraid of quitting. There should be no fear. And that's what I'm saying. But because of intimidation and other things these employers are doing, which is more of a mental game, they're unfortunately going to force the government to some point regulate them.
But that's irrelevant, because the real power is still with the people.
Exactly.
And if they would just exercise their power, they wouldn't need a union. They wouldn't need government regulation.
Well, and it's funny. People are, in one respect, this time is unprecedented because they can't find, McDonald's can't find people to flip burgers. So they're offering, a lot of them are, fast food joints are offering $18 an hour. They're offering signing bonuses. I just traveled back from Alabama, and so I went through Tennessee and got to see some of the carnage in Bowling Green, Kentucky. But it was really funny because we passed it used to be a Hitachi automotive plant, and they sold that off to some other, but they're still there. They were like paying close to $20 an hour because they needed people, and they were giving a $3,000 signing bonus. And I'm like, you know, if that's the case, then, you know, you can find another job. But on the flip side of it, too, is people, use your brains. People are not, I mean, yes, there are stupid people, but if you've worked anywhere, go in and negotiate your own deal. Yeah. You don't need collective bargaining. You don't need them to come in and say, you know, hey, you know, somebody to determine what you're going to get, and then you have to pay them part of what you're getting anyway to make that take all of what you're entitled to home. You know, negotiate your own deal. If you know, if the job is too dangerous, negotiate extra pay. You know, if they make sure you understand all their policies before you go to work there. Because there's no state where you are not an at-will employee, regardless of what type of employee you are.
And to me, the other thing is that there's a corporate culture in this country where the individual worker can be replaced in an instant.
But that's not really the true, though, because even in what they call, you know, unskilled jobs. So let's say working in an Amazon warehouse, there's still a ramp up time in getting somebody, a new employee who hasn't worked here. Now, that ramp up time might not be months, but that ramp up time is going to be weeks, and that's weeks of lost productivity.
But the individual contribution of said worker is not valued
correct
enough for you as an individual to say, I demand change.
Well,
or
part of this is corporate thinking, though.
Your move is to say, here's what I'm asking the company to do. Either you do it or I leave.
Yeah,
that's your move. You know, it's not adversarial.
No.
It shouldn't be adversarial. And if it is, you need to walk anyway.
Yes, yes. Well, I also think, you know, you're talking about times when you are flush with people wanting to come work for you. You know, it's supply and demand. It's Keynesian economics. If I have a steady supply of workers and an individual worker or 10 individual workers walk away, but I have 10 people waiting in line to take their places, that's different. But right now, I don't have any of those people waiting in line. As a matter of fact, I'm begging people to come work for me, and they're not coming to work when I'm offering really good wages.
Yes.
You know?
While at the same time, retention efforts are at an all-time low, too.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like companies are wanting people to leave.
Yeah.
They're
well,
not rewarding,
you know,
loyalty.
I think you get in the upper management, and they're thinking, well, we'll just automate as much as we can automate. It takes time to automate. It takes capital to automate. It also takes – who are the people who understand the processes and procedures that you have to automate?
Yes. Well, and that's what I was getting back. Yeah. I wanted to come back to your McDonald's thing because, quite frankly, you don't really need a lot of human resources to run an outfit like that.
No. Well, particularly now, most of the McDonald's around southwestern Ohio, their lobbies aren't even open. So it's not like you know, they need a couple of cooks, part-time manager, and a couple of people to throw the bags out the windows. And that's about it.
They're quite frankly, now, McDonald's.
Yeah.
Has always been about what you get at McDonald's in one town.
It's the same as
is
what
the
you
exact
get
same as you get in the next town. Now, what does that sound like to you?
Well, that's
that sounds
factory.
Like automation.
Yep.
They're already developing that technology where they don't even need the cook.
Oh, I know. They
all they need is the guy to take it off the assembly line, put it in a bag, and give it to the customer.
Yeah, and well, look at
they don't need people to take orders.
So it's kind of funny. So Jack in the Box, we don't have many around here. There's one down on Tylersville Road in Mason. And they're not open because they can't get workers. But their entire front end was automated. They basically had cooks in the back end and only one or two. And they had one person who then bagged the orders and took them to the counter and announced your number, but they didn't have anybody at the register. You went up and it was a touch screen and you popped your thing in and you swiped your card and paid for it.
Now, here's my prediction.
Okay.
My prediction is you're going to see a return to maybe not mom and pop operations, but franchised mom and pop operations where it takes less people to operate a business like that. And you are much more invested in it because it's yours.
Yes.
That I see as the future of this particular problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think, because we're already seeing it from the big boys.
Yeah.
We're seeing the automation happening. McDonald's is a good example. They only, most times they only have one cashier at the registers now, because if they're open, because they have the kiosks.
Yes, and I was just going to say, and it's because there are people like me who I don't like that. Yeah. I want to talk to a human being. I don't want to do that.
But
I mean, I've done it.
Yeah.
But that's only because they haven't had someone there.
But it makes, I think, from a technology. So the harder solution is the cooking assembling solution,
mm-hmm.
in the back end. That's more like automotive robotics, where you need multiple robots and there's a big logic system and all kinds of stuff going in. But on the front end, it's much easier to replace employees who are taking orders at a register if you provide the customer. I mean, it's the same concept that Walmart's done with their automatic.
Yes.
When you go to a Walmart, our super Walmart, it's kind of funny. They have probably 30 lanes of self-checkout with two people, one to supervise one side and one to supervise the other.
Yep.
They have 30 other regular lanes out between them.
Mm-hmm.
And only one of those will ever be open.
And that's the one that sells cigarettes.
Correct. That's the one.
And that's it.
That's it. And Kroger's is the same way. We just went to a Kroger marketplace, and they will, even at the busiest times of day, they have two sets of automated checkouts. And now Kroger's is a little different. Walmart set theirs up because they have the quick checkouts. They have a number of those on both ends, but then they also have the full checkouts, like where you can have the conveyor belts and mm-hmm. you can do large orders yourself.
Yes.
Kroger's isn't quite there yet. So they'll have two regular lanes where if you have like a big order and it involves people in a bagger mm-hmm. to get you in and out, they'll do it. But then they have like 30 self-checkouts. And so they'll only have three people manning the whole front end of the store at any given time. And, you know, eventually, and I think automation, like in grocery stores, is going to come to the point where they're not going to, they might still have one or two people in the front end to manage the checking out process, but boxed and canned items that need to be restocked on shelves, that will become completely automated, because it would not be hard to build inexpensive robots to go do that. That would be accurate, because they could, you could have them scan the barcode, and then, you know, we have refrigerators today that will tell you how to, and think about it. If I can eliminate a person with a robot doing that job, now I think that's likely to happen. Now the cooking end of, I know that there are, I've seen demos and seen production of like robotic assembly lines that will cook fast food and all this stuff. That's a much more expensive endeavor. And the way a lot of the fast food chains are set up, you brought up franchises, but like McDonald's is one of the bigger, 70% of their stores or more are owned by franchisees.
Yeah.
And so that automation that goes in those stores has to be purchased by those franchisees.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lot less chance that the more expensive things, that there's not a quicker return on. You're not going to see until that the cost of that stuff comes down and the accuracy of that stuff, because it, you know, if they get an order wrong, that costs them. It either costs them, if people don't come back and get it fixed, it costs them in reputation, which means people don't go, or it costs them time and materials to fix something, because they either have to remake meals or give something away, you know.
But that's why I think it's going to be the McDonald's of the world that will do that and be the leaders of that.
But I don't think it'll happen in the franchisee owned McDonald's. I think it'll happen in the corporate stores.
It'll start there, and then at some point that technology will come down in cost to the point where it's going to be the franchisee who's going to say, well, it's more cost effective for me to hire a robot than a human being to do this job.
True. Well, you know,
because they spend so much time trying to get people hired.
Yeah.
That
and they don't stay around. They go, "Oh, this is fast food. It sucks." And so, you know, they don't stay at the restaurants for a long period of time. It, you know, the other thing that's going on that almost nobody mentions right now is that the baby boomer generation from World War II,
mm-hmm.
They're all retiring at this point. And so there is a dearth of jobs out there. And jobs that, you know, are management jobs, marketing jobs, high-level jobs, because a lot of these people were highly educated because the GI Bill paid for, you know, these kids that, you know, the parents had money to be able to pay for these kids to go to college. And so we're also seeing that in the higher end job space, not just the technology space where there's always a shortage of people.
Right.
But we're seeing it across the board in the higher end. And so people who are qualified, who were working some of these more Joe type jobs, air quotes, Joe jobs, they're moving into these vacancies because even though they might not have the complete skill set, they might have most of it, or companies are willing, as you know, because these are higher paying jobs, is developing these people to fill these jobs, because we don't have we don't have enough college graduates coming through to replace them. You know,
well, not only is it an education gap, but it's a population gap too.
That's what I'm saying. That's a huge thing.
There's and I forget the numbers, but there's a certain level of population that the succeeding generation must sustain in order to sustain the culture.
Yep.
And we're not reaching it.
No. Well, again, you're talking about the greatest generation born in the United States as far as numbers go. And every generation after that has getting smaller and smaller and smaller. All of these people who were contributing to the workforce are now retiring. And we have this, I mean, it's not just like a small gap. It is an exponentially large gap because there's multiple generations after this. And so we're going to see the effects of this for a long time. So automation has to happen. The question is whether the skills gap or the education gap can be closed with the people who are there to then start filling some of these other things. I mean, as all of these baby boomers retire, our healthcare system has got to have more healthcare workers. And, you know, and I see this as a long-term issue, and it's just being exacerbated by stupid things like vaccine mandates and things like that. You know, as far as my understanding is, the United States is a free country. And and where are all these anti-vaxxers who wouldn't vaccinate their kids for things that, you know, the school district wanted?
They exist, but and some of them homeschool.
Yeah.
But it's not as large a movement as you might think.
Oh, I well, it's squeaky wheel.
My frustration with the current vaccine mandates is the vaccines that we're giving our kids to go to school prior to this nonsense had been tried, tested, and approved.
Well, they'd taken 50 years to develop some of these vaccines.
That's what I'm getting at.
There was long-term testing to figure out, and these vaccines are, they're pretty much have 100% efficacy rate
at no point.
Yeah, we don't have people catching polio after taking the polio vaccine,
right?
But we have people who are catching COVID after taking the COVID vaccine, and yes, the COVID vaccine does provide some benefits, but it's more like, It shouldn't be called a vaccine. It should be called like the flu shot. You know, you take.
Well, and that's just it. The flu shot is technically a vaccine.
Yeah.
Or they're being called a vaccine. Although yeah. I think, like you, neither one of those should be called a vaccine.
Well, they provide protection and lessen symptoms against the disease, but they don't provide real
it's not a real vaccine.
Yeah, it's not like polio, where we essentially eliminated polio from the face of the earth.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and you happen to know that I'm wrong, but I would venture a guess that when that polio vaccine was being developed, wasn't being required.
No. Well, when they did go to do the polio, bring the polio vaccine out, there was a huge public distrust of taking the vaccine. And so there were huge marketing campaigns that went on to get people to vaccinate against polio. Even though it was well known that, you know, if you caught polio, you were probably, if you didn't die, you were probably going to be paralyzed, or you were going to, you know, there were bad side effects, you know, and you know, there were public figures who had polio, like Franklin Delano Roosevelt, you know, and, but it's like all of that went out the window. I don't know. That's a totally another discussion.
It is.
And not a prognostication. But I you know, going back to the whole labor shortage thing, that I see that happening. It's going to continue. We're essentially, we should have learned when it started in the 80s in Japan, when the elderly population soon outpaced the younger generations underneath them, that. And then as we progressed through to 2000 and, you know, Japan was like, you know, you go to a hotel in Japan and it's probably a robot that's going to greet you at the check-in desk because they don't have enough people to work those types of jobs.
Yeah.
You know, and they also have huge public effort to take care of their elderly population.
Which we don't hear.
Yeah. So, do you have a question? A prognostication question?
What would be the big surprise in technology next year?
So, there's some really cool things happening in technology. But I see 2022 as being a dearth. We have technology that's developed. But unless you are a big player like Apple or Intel, and you bring something really cool to the table, you're not going to get it distributed and ubiquitously used. So one of the things that's going on is, you know, they talk about, you know, we've talked about AR and VR. Mm-hmm. Augmented reality and virtual reality. And you have Facebook bought Oculus, and you know, which is a VR headset. And I have gotten to play with one, and it's a gimmick. I mean, it's not really useful. Augmented reality, in my opinion, is useful. If you can make a HUD in your car that projects on the windshield, that provides extra information without having to take your eyes off the road, or you are able to project something onto a pair of eyeglasses. I mean, and some of it seems pointless because we don't have, we kind of have it today, but we don't have it today. Like to be able, like if you were in a city and you were walking down the street and you were looking for a certain restaurant, you know, and so you had gone to your phone, which is connected to your augmented reality glasses, and you put up a walking map to it. But instead of having to look at your phone constantly, it's projected on the inside of your glasses, and then it, you know, as you get nearer, it flashes on the sign or whatever. That is really useful technology. And Apple is supposed to be releasing their AR glasses this year. I think that's going to be a big thing. I mean, such a big thing. You know, every time Apple releases something that in addition to their ecosystem, everybody pans it, you know, as they're developing it. Oh, it won't be that big. It won't be. Everybody pan the Apple Watch. They own more market share in smart devices than any other company in the world. They're going to release these AR glasses, and yeah, they'll be limited in that first generation, but it'll have enough functionality that you'll see rapid adoption. And then when version 2 comes out a year later, you'll see that adoption like exponentially happen. The only risk for Apple, and I think that's why you'll see limited adoption this year, is that they won't be able to make enough to get them out to people. And they're smart enough to go, I might not even release it. Another thing, there are some new battery technologies that will affect your smartphone, laptops, AR glasses, electric vehicles. I see that being a huge, huge thing, but we won't be able to manufacture enough to do, you know, it'll be, we're introducing this technology. You can get it in 2 years. But, you know, a lot of technology is iterative. There's very few times when you have something like the iPhone drop or you have the television drop and it becomes the same. And, you know, and we also look at these things in hindsight. In reality, it was slow adoption at first, and then as it became more ubiquitous over time. And I think that's what a lot of these things will be. I mean, there are some really cool things going on. We're defying Moore's Law every month and creating processors and memory that are faster and faster and faster. But to the average person, you know, that's something that, 5 years from now, you know, they're going to see and be interested in. I work in the scientific and research part of IT, and so, you know, I have customers who not only want, but they need the bleeding edge to do the research and stuff that they're doing. So we get to see these technologies first. You know, I'll tell you from a technology standpoint, and it's surprising that the deployment will come from NASA, but there's some big things going on in NASA. And those are the things that I think will have a larger term effect on the everyday person. You know, ISS is, it's ending its operational life as a NASA space station. It's not going away. It's going to be given to a commercial entity and they're going to run it. And NASA will still be involved with parts of it, but they're building a new station called Gateway, which the reason it's called Gateway is it is a place to stage payloads to go to the moon and other places within our solar system. And that technology is here and they're getting ready to deploy it.
Now here's
the SLS system, mm-hmm, that NASA developed, not the commercial crew, which is, you know, basically SpaceX one. That NASA built system is being, parts of it are in orbit now. They've been launching it so that they can build it in space. That's really cool. And the reason those things are cool is because we talk about Mars because Mars, love him or hate him, Donald Trump is a marketer. And so to get people behind NASA, he talked about Mars. Mars is a long-term goal. But everybody can get excited about, we're going to Mars. I don't see us really going to Mars. It'll happen. The first ship will launch in my lifetime. But I don't know if I'm, you know, if I will see the any results from that. But going back to the moon with Gateway, using the commercial crew project at SpaceX, the fact that they're wanting to put a permanent base on the moon, kind of a la All of Mankind, mm-hmm, Jamestown colony, the fact that a lot of the SLS program and Gateway are also involved in exploring the Kuiper Belt, the asteroid belt in our solar system, because that's where the commercial applications start coming in, where we can go mine new things, find natural resources that we're either low on here on Earth or just need more of. And I think that and the commercialization of space. So we'll once they can get resources in space, it won't make sense to bring that back to the planet. But it will make a lot of sense to start doing manufacturing in space, which leads to being able to do a lot of really cool things. And I think that over the next 12 months, we're going to see a lot of progress in that direction. Not only because they're actually making progress, but also as a, the Biden administration needs something to distract people from all the other things that are going wrong.
Which is why they won't think of it.
Probably. But the money's been allocated, and it won't be pulled away because it's already been obligated.
I just don't want to see NASA give up ISS before having another station.
No.
That's like even basic.
So Gateway is a logistics platform. It's also crew quarters. It's a launch platform, and it's already under construction. I mean, they're already flying the modules up. The problem with ISS, and ISS still has a, for, according to NASA.
I just don't want to see them give up the space shuttle and have to bum rides from the Russians.
Yeah,
you know, that's what I'm talking about.
I don't think they're going to do that. That's not in the plans. The issue with ISS is from an operational point of view.
It's outlived its usefulness.
It's not that it's outlived its usefulness. It's just, you know, all the things that happen. It's just like a ship. You know, you can only use it for so long, and then metal fatigue and everything else get in the way. And you either have to completely refit it or you scrap it and build something new. And since it's much harder to refit the ISS, they're going to build something new because also the mission has changed.
Agreed.
You know, and they're also not getting, even though ISS has always been a poor name for that space station. Yes, there's been international cooperation in that space station, but the reality of it is it's primarily been funded by the U.S. and primarily been manned by the U.S. And they need something else. A lot of the functions of ISS will eventually go to the lunar, when they get a lunar colony established, will go to that lunar colony. But Gateway will be, have a much longer operational timeline because it's going to be their...
Well, it's...
I mean, they're going to do some of those scientific payloads and stuff like that at Gateway. But NASA's goal is to have Gateway finished within the next couple of years. And in 5 years, you know, say, okay, it's time to for our involvement in ISS go away. And then some commercial companies want to come in and do some things.
And I think that's great. Because what that would do is that would... allow innovation of the ISS platform, which I think could lead to many more things.
Well, and, you know, and there's some other things that NASA is working on that we don't tend to think of. You know, they're actually working on some garbage collection systems to pull all those satellites and things out of orbit because we have so many things that we're tracking that exist in low Earth orbit now. That it's getting crowded up there and harder and harder to put new space stations and new spacecraft safely through that area. And I think next year is going to be a definitive moment, not only for NASA, but U.S. Space Force in conjunction with NASA, getting new systems up there and trying to do some things to improve space so that we can then go to that next step. The big step, which really benefits mankind. I think that's all we need to prognosticate about. Let us know what you think is going to be good for this next year, whether you agree with us, whether you don't agree with us, and why. And send that to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
Listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the Digital Flip Side.